B-Pod Studios.
Felger.
I don't know, guys. Am I going to play? Am I not going to play? What am I going to do?
Mass.
Yeah, Mass, you stupid. S-T-O-O. Stupid Mass.
It's time for Felger and Mass, presented by DraftKings on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Let's talk Mac Jones. I said this last week. Everybody's terrified to compare him to Tom Brady. Well, of course, old Tom Brady and young Mac Jones. Folks, young Mac Jones looks like young Tom Brady. You need to just put your arms around it, because that's exactly what it looks like. Now, everybody rolls their eyes over last night, because they didn't ask him to do a lot last night. So just take last night out. Mac Jones' last six games, he has the highest passer rating in the NFL, completing almost 70% of his throws, 9 touchdowns, no interceptions. At the podium and in the game, never makes a mistake. Highest passer rating in the league in those six games. Higher than Matt Stafford. A lot fewer mistakes than Matt Stafford. Ask yourself this. When Brady was winning early, and all of us, myself included, were saying system quarterback. And then he goes to Tampa, and he takes a lot of his system. And now nobody says system quarterback. But Tom took about 80% of what Tampa did last year at the bye week, and he's doing the same system.
And again, Colin Coward this week meant to say 80% of what the Patriots did. Brady took 80% of what the Patriots did to Tampa. So, that's for Gasper, that's for Murray, that's for all of you. Mac Jones is a young Tom Brady, says Colin Coward. And all it is the next guy in Belichick's system. And oh, by the way, what Brady did last year was 80% of the Patriots' system. So, Ted Johnson in for Tony Maserati today. Big Jim in our update studio. Chris Gasper joining us in our Town Fair Tire Studios. Chris Gasper is brought to you by Premier Basement Waterproofing. Our guy, Mike Albert, wishes everyone a happy holiday season and gives thanks to his team and every customer who has come on board the Game Over for Water train. For you to get on board for 2022, hey, not to worry about water this winter. That's what you want to do. To get on board
The Game Over for Water train.
Why do I butcher this? To get on board for 2022 and not worry about water this winter, schedule with Crystal by calling 844-LIVE-DRY or visit premierbasement.net. And Murray, just go ahead and say it for us. What will it be if you do that?
Game over for water.
What's up, Gasper?
What's going on, gents? How you guys doing?
We're good, buddy. How you doing?
How do you feel about that?
Teddy.
Good to see you, bud.
How do you feel about that commentary? Mac Jones is a young Tom Brady, and he just brought 80% of the Patriots system down to Tampa last year, and that's why he won.
I mean, look, I guess, and Teddy would know better than I would. If you want to say 2001, I would, you know, still sort of disagree, but I can see it. I just think 2002, Brady came, he led the NFL in touchdown passes. So if he's a young Tom Brady, that means next year he'll lead the NFL in touchdown passes. That's what it means. I just think, again, for me, looking at it from the outside, those teams that you were on were led by the defense. But I think people confuse not being asked to do more with not being able to do more. I think if he had been asked to do more at those times, and I'm speaking of Tom Brady, he could have done it. I think the quarterback they have right now, they ask him to only do certain things because they know he's not capable of carrying the team, elevating the team, uplifting the team, promoting the team at this point in his career. And I think that's the difference.
Would you say, though, that Belichick's system, this storyline, has made a massive comeback in the last 2 weeks?
Oh, absolutely. And look, I do think this is a big win for Bill. I absolutely do. And I think that he went out in the offseason and spent this money and upgraded the team. And they're a team, and I've said this many times, if you look at this team, they're functioning the way they're built to function, which is defense first, offensive line, running game. We'll manage the quarterback. We won't ask him to put it all on his plate. We won't ask him to put it all on his shoulders, and we'll set it up. There'll be games like the Tennessee game where we feel like we have an advantage we can exploit, and he'll throw for 300 yards. And then there'll be games like Buffalo when basically we feel like, look, he's a sidecar. The advantage to exploit is the running game. He just has to hand off. I think the team functions exactly the way it was built to function, regardless of who the quarterback is. Now, do I think they've gotten better quarterback play than they built for and anticipated? Absolutely. I think he's exceeded their expectations. I think he certainly exceeded my expectations. You know, he's a good quarterback, but is he the reason that they're where they are right now, capital T? I don't think so.
He's like Jesus. He's the reason for the season. Say it, Gasper.
Yeah, give him credit. That's pretty good.
He's the savior.
Well, see, to me, that commentary, Mac Jones is Tom Brady in 01 is really just a statement about Belichick. It's as the second part of that thing, it's the system. And so when someone does that, when someone compares Mac Jones to Tom Brady, I think that's just feeding Bill and feeding Bill's ability to say,
yeah, he looks like Tom Brady because we're coaching him up the same way. We're putting him in our system.
Right.
And we can put a lot of guys in there and they'll look the same. And that's the way Bill sort of approaches it.
Yeah, of course. Of course. And I would just say this major difference that you guys have talked about is clearly the game was just a different game back then. It's amazing. You know, I wish I played when they had the mics in the helmet so I can get instruction.
You mean defensively?
Defensively.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I can, hey, watch for this, watch for this. Because back then it was all signals.
Well, and you know why they had to change it.
Yeah.
Because you were stealing the signals.
Oh, like, the franchise I played for was that I didn't know it, or else I would have put a stop to it. But so into that, you think about it. Tom doesn't have somebody in his ear saying, "Watch for this, look for this," before it goes blank. So you know, it's a different game. It's a totally different game. And I will say this: the culture and the identity of this offense and the system wasn't developed back then. It was an organic kind of thing that was. You know, they were learning every single week. Charlie Weiss, you think Josh McDaniels is just a Charlie Weiss knockoff? Really, this offense today, Charlie Weiss had a lot of the same philosophies and a lot of the same concepts, but it was still new.
Well, didn't Josh come up and just learn Weiss's playbook, which was what, the Ron Earhart, if you really go back to that? Like, so it is, it's the same
it's
offense. The same,
it's the same thing. It's the same kind of deal. It's a lot of the misdirection, horizontal, really creative screen games, getting the ball out fast, having a really good slot receiver, working on the slot. So it's the same kind of thing, but just think how hard it would have been as a quarterback back then, kind of trying to learn all that. We're here, it's an established identity kind of thing on offense.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, Brady's learning it basically as everybody else is learning it. You know, Mac's coming into it where, look, a lot of guys, now there are new guys. Hunter Henry's learning it. Kendrick Bourne's learning it. Aguilar, but the offensive line knows it.
And Mac Jones, real quick, to be fair, he has a lot more weapons than Tom had back.
Oh, sure.
Did you see what the tight ends were? Wiggy. Our boy Wiggy. All right. But him
and Rutledge.
Rutledge.
Do you know how many catches they had that year?
No.
Oh, 30?
19.
Oh, combined. Wow.
19. So I'm just saying, Mac Jones is working with a lot better offensive weapons.
We had 14 alone in the Raiders game, right?
No.
Something like that.
That's crazy. I'll just say this. I think that Kyle Hurd and others are comparing Mac Jones to the wrong Patriots quarterback. The comparison should be Matt Castle in 2008 and the way they managed him and brought him along. So by the end of it, he's throwing like four touchdown passes. But there was a lot of screens that year. They protected him in the games. They had to protect him. But by the end of the year, they had a ton of faith in him, and they basically just let him air it out. And we might get to that point with Mac. But I think people like Cowherd comparing him to the wrong quarterback. I'd also say, if you're going to give Mac Jones all that credit and say he's a young Brady, let me flip it on you guys. What does that say about Bill? He can only win with a young elite quarterback? Like, only if he gets like a top five guy dropped in his lap, that's how he wins? That's so, kind of what Cowherd's saying.
I think he's saying, no, it's just the opposite, that he's just a game manager and it's about the system. I mean, that's what I think he's saying.
Okay, maybe that's what he's saying, but I just look at it and say, if you're going to say that Mac Jones is on an arc to be Tom Brady, then what does that sort of say overall about Bill and what he can have success with? You're basically saying, well, he needs this Hall of Fame type quarterback to really win at a really high level. And isn't that the opposite of what the Patriots coaching staff said in the Ian O'Connor book? We can win with any of the top 15.
Yeah. I think the kid is the textbook example of the 15th quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, right, you know, now, like, is
Joe. Yeah, right now, right.
Right now is a rookie.
Joe Average. Absolutely. So, I mean, I think winning.
Be careful, Felgie. Oh, don't. You don't want to use words like Joe and average. Nothing that starts with a J. You don't want to do that. People get very
You're
upset
sensitive about that. Huh?
Very upset if you're saying like Joe Average. You know, that's not good. You don't want to go down that road,
Chris. What else stands out from the commentary following the game this week? You know, has anything gotten out of hand?
I think a little bit of the dumping on Josh Allen's gotten out of hand
bit. Agreed.
I thought, given the conditions, he played pretty well. Look, Josh Allen's never going to be Peyton Manning or Tom Brady in terms of that cerebral level of quarterback, but he didn't turn the football over. He made some pretty good throws into the win, and I just find it funny that it's sort of like, okay, so Belichick played the game against the opposing quarterback knowing that they would not ultimately be able to execute and get it in there. So a big part of the game plan was based on, his belief of the talent level of the opposing quarterback. But on the other side, zero part of the game plan had to do with his belief or lack thereof in his own quarterback.
Good job.
That's pretty much what it comes to. So the three passes that Mac attempted are no way a reflection on Mac or what they believed about Mac or what the game planning was. But, you know, Josh Allen and his 30 passes and into the win and him not scoring the touchdowns was 100% a reflection of the fact that Bill Belichick knew that Josh Allen wouldn't get the job done, knew that Brian Daboll would call those two runs on first downs, even though the Buffalo Bills passed the most on first down of any team in the NFL, 56.8%, and had basically gotten down the field exclusively on the pass. But Belichick knew that they'd run those two stupid run plays and that Dawson Knox would drop a ball, and it was all about, you know, oh, Josh Allen can't get it done against us. That was the game plan.
See, you would normally call that pretzel logic. I call this Patriots logic. So, yes, this is what we run into. So you think the three pass attempts is in some way a reflection on Mac Jones?
For that game. I mean, not overall. I mean, he threw for 300 yards the week before, but given those conditions and for that game and what they were up against, yes.
Of course.
How could it not be?
Do you think that the first one shook them?
Yes, because if Jonnu Smith doesn't touch that, it's intercepted. And there's a good chance even if he tips it. You saw that game last night, right? Yeah. You know, most it tips and overthrows, as my guy Darius Butler always says in tweets. There's a good chance a lot of times Jonnu Smith, what a play to tip it to himself. But if he just tips it, it goes up in the air. It lands in, you know, Micah Hyde's hands or Poyer, one of those guys, and it's a pick six. So I think they were definitely spooked by that. And you look at the passes he threw. There was the one Jonnu Smith caught, which could have been an interception. It was a way overthrow. Then an incompletion, and then a glorified handoff screen. So that, but that says nothing about how they felt about him in the wind.
That's fair. You're basically shooting down all my takes on that. But I will say, I was listening to Zoe in pregame, and he said that Mac Jones couldn't hit. He was saying that there were four receivers running streaks on the left side, and they hit them all in the feet. And so if you're out there throwing balls into the ground in pregame, Bill's got to be like, no, we can't.
No, I agree. No, I'm agreeing with you on that, Teddy. That's what I'm saying. I think people are saying the three, they only, you know, threw it three times, Teddy, because they knew the run game was so good. And, you know, if the run game hadn't been as good, Mac would have thrown it 25 times. You know, they would have had no problem with that. No, I agree with you. They saw him in pregame. We're like, nah, he can't do it in this.
But I've also made the point of, I feel like Bill didn't think Josh Allen would come through in the clutch. So
I feel like he managed
the game basically. Okay, two chances in the, you can't expect them to have two failed, opportunities in the red zone like they did. But I just think that's how Bill thinks. He's like, he'll find a way to screw it up.
Teddy, I don't disagree with you. I'm just telling you he was playing both quarterbacks, not just Josh Allen. That's my only point. He played both guys.
Yeah. Let's take some football calls for Gasper right after this.
Felger and Mass.
I'm not even going to look it up because I'd rather just deliver that to you.
Facts be damned.
Yep.
Make the shirts.
Yep.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
I was reminded watching this game of walking through Bill Belichick's library in his home in Massachusetts 17 years ago. The library has since gone to the Naval Academy in Annapolis. But it was his big football library. And I looked up on one of the shelves and I saw The Art of War by Sun Tzu. And Belichick told me that all the books in this library taught him something about how to coach football and how to win at football. And I said, The Art of War, what could that have taught you? And he shrugged and he goes, you know, don't go to war when the ground is muddy. You know, and he sort of chuckled. But I think his point was what Sun Tzu clearly taught him is that you can't choose your battlegrounds, you know, and in football, there are so many things out of your control. You have to control your own controllables. And I believe in this game, Mike, the reason that this will easily go among his top 10 victories is that it came against a team that, if you think about it, what are the Buffalo Bills? They're Western New York's team. They are used to, or should be used to, all kinds of conditions. And yet the Patriots, who also are used to playing in lousy weather too, but the Patriots basically handled it better than the Buffalo Bills.
Peter King from earlier in the week. Again, you know Bill's, it's going Bill's way when
people are reciting for him Sun Tzu in the article.
Oh, my gosh. And isn't Peter King out of the thing for Bill? Like,
well, they had a falling out at
over Spygate.
Deflategate or Spygate, one of the...
He's got Peter back on board. You know, maybe he...
I don't think he does.
Oh, you
don't?
Okay.
I think Peter King has to go back to a story 17 years
ago.
He hasn't had access for the last...
Fair point.
Is that what you do, too?
No, there's your
boating stories from Nantucket from 17 years ago?
Actually, I do. Yes, I do. Yeah. When you want a Belichick nugget, it's from way back in the day before I was put on his S list. But no, that's true. That's totally what I do. Absolutely. All right, to your phones here, as promised, with Gasper. We've got Matt in Braintree. What do you got, Matt?
First, that bumper with Adam Jones, that was kind of a good preface to my call here. Jones was absolutely right. They haven't played a single person. And for you, and Teddy, I love you to death. I just disagree with you on this. To say in the previous segment that these seven games have, like, rectified his legacy is asinine. Like they haven't beat anybody. And what people keep forgetting to say here is that he needs to win a Super Bowl. So if...
Look, when you say they haven't beat anybody, they just beat the defending division champion who just went to the AFC title game in their own building. So what do you mean they haven't beat anybody? That's not fair.
No, but when it goes against what all this is about of what Brady's doing, right? Brady won the Super Bowl. Bill loses in the first round of the playoffs, is anyone going to say, well, that was a great 7-game winning streak?
No. Yes, they will. And just maybe you didn't hear it right. Bill hasn't caught up to Brady when we're talking about who's more important and who's ahead in the scoreboard and that thing. No, he's got a ways to go on Brady. He's got to win playoff games and a Super Bowl and that thing. I'm not talking about Brady.
But even if that's what it is, or they just win one playoff game, they've still accomplished a hell of a lot. No. Because you know how many young quarterbacks, rookie quarterbacks have come in and won their first playoff game in their first year? It's like two in the last 15 years. It's Russell Wilson and Roethlisberger.
All I'm saying is Bill's put his legacy back on track. I mean, I don't know exactly how to say it, but... most of us, through that September and October of this year, had a lot of doubts. I mean, never mind last year. I think a lot of us will say, well, that's a mulligan year, fine.
Well, they say now, with the benefit of hindsight, you say it's a mulligan year. But with the 2-4 start, people
yes.
were sticking the 2 years together.
And I was even going back to the last half of Brady's last year.
And then
you had all these records from Thanksgiving of 2019 to Halloween of 2021. They were like 5 or 6 games under 500. And... at that point, you looked at 3 or 4 bad drafts, and there are 2 games under 500. Their defense can't stop a nosebleed. And you sit there and you say, oh, my God, Bill, it may be over for Bill. This might be Don Shula at the end. This might be Tom Landry at the end.
That's what I was thinking.
Me too. I didn't have the answer, but I'm starting to wonder, like, oh, no, this really could be it. I think these last 2 months have sort of put that aside. That's what I'm talking
about. Yeah, no, I think the last 2 months is just it's quieted the negative conversations and narrative about Bill. Bill took a beating unlike no other time in his career, like he took last year, in my opinion. Like, I mean, it was when Tom did that and then Bill, you know, kind of what a lot of people just mailed it in last year. He was hammered, all right? And so, and you're right, to go 2-4, he was rightfully hammered. I know that maybe the teams that he's beaten you can make excuses for each of those wins. Maybe they didn't have the player, the weather, whatever.
Look, in there is possibly 3 playoff teams. The Chargers, the Browns, the Bills, those are, you know, either going to be there or right on the bubble. So, like, no, I'm sorry, caller. I'm not with you. Is it Spear on the Cape? Go ahead, Spear.
Yeah. I wanted to just mention the return of Trent Brown. He went out the first game, I don't know, first or second play, but when I was watching Monday night and I saw Damian Harris running for that goal line and I saw him standing there, jogging a little behind with his hand up in the air with number one as if he was running into the end zone, I said, is that a coincidence that this line and run game is doing so well? And if...
Well, let me just stop you there, Spear. Thanks for the call. Trent Brown's return.
Yeah, I'll be honest. You know, I was a big doubter in terms of his ability to stay healthy with that calf. But I'll tell you, when he's out there, he's a difference maker. The line was already good. It had already started to solidify, really going back to the Houston game when they were missing 4 of their 5 starters. But, man, you put him in there, and it's like it just puts him over the top. And it reminds me a little bit of – I remember covering Super Bowl 52 and looking at Philadelphia and thinking, man, I know – my fellow writers will never do this, my fellow media members, but if you were really going to pick the MVP of that game, it was the Philadelphia offensive line. They owned that game. They dominated that game. And that's what you're seeing, I think, from the Patriots offensive line the last couple of games.
Paul in Marshville. Go ahead, Paul.
Hey, guys. I got a scenario here that you might think about. 4 years ago, Bill Belichick gets a phone call from Nick Saban and says, I got a redshirt freshman that you want to take a look at. That sound right?
No.
No, because they weren't even sure he was going to. It wasn't even a guarantee he was going to start last year. Bryce Young almost beat him out.
You want to think that's some sort of master? So you think this is all some sort of master plan, Paul?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. And, well, at least he's honest.
Chess and checkers.
Yeah, I got this guy that can't beat out Tua Tagovailoa, and I have this really good freshman coming in that I think I want to play over him. But, yeah, I think he's your franchise quarterback, Bill. Take a look at him.
Why do they – Mac Jones came out because he was going to lose his job this year?
No, that's not – no, he had an awesome year. He wasn't going to
– He wasn't?
But last year, going to last year –
Who had a better year, Mac Jones last year or Bryce Young this year?
Mac Jones. I mean, Bryce Young's going to win the Heisman, but, I mean, Mac Jones, his year was phenomenal. I mean, they're pretty similar, but, I mean, Mac completed, like, 77% of his passes. I think Bryce Young broke some record he had. Bryce Young's going to win the Heisman. But the way I would look at it and say, like, there's not really a lot of drop. Like, if you look at the Alabama quarterbacks, right, from Tua to Mac to Bryce Young, there's virtually no drop-off.
Let me tell you what Bill's plan was. I'll find a guy. I'm coaching him. We'll be fine.
They're all the same to me.
They're all the same. I'll find the guy. Is it Mac Young or is it freaking guy Davis Mills? Wow, take him in the third round. I'll coach him up. They'll be fine. I mean, that's what I think.
I think that's how he was thinking too, Michael. But I will say this. I think Mac has surprised Bill.
I agree. I think so.
I think Mac has surprised Bill a little bit. And I think Bill loves the kid. I just got a feeling. I just think he freaking loves this kid because... Well, whatever you say, Bill. Whatever you want, Bill. And you know him and the Phil Perry low five and training camp. How he rose to the occasion when Cam Newton was out. His toughness. I think Bill loves this kid because he will do whatever he says. He'll toe the line. He's the best brand ambassador that he could have. And he's
there's just
affordable.
I was just about to get to that. There's one more box to check. What are you going to ask for when the contract's up? Yep. And if he asks for something that Bill likes, oh, it's over.
But all that said, Ted, do you think that Bill doesn't like the fact that Mac Jones went out with his team and just got this, like, all this endorsement thing? And he's, you know, it's in the Mac 10 and the trademarking, all of that.
Well, I have a small part of me thinks that that's why he only threw three passes. You want to get trademarks, huh? MJ10, Mac. Okay. Well, I want you to hand the ball off.
See how many shoes you sell handing the ball off.
And if you think I'm like going too far, oh, no. I have examples in the past. Well, Wes Welker, one of the perfect examples, all right? But there's other guys that he will, if he wants to prove a point. Oh, yeah.
Was it Jonas Gray, the running back Sports Illustrated?
Yep. Wasn't there a situation with Troy Brown where he was pretty close to an incentive, like a catches incentive or something, and then it somehow didn't pan out for Troy?
Yeah. Those kinds of stories don't end with Troy. Let me tell you that. I mean, you know, so if Bill is he will use playing time, and he can make your life miserable behind the scenes if you do something off the field that he doesn't approve of.
I love Interesting. It. Try selling shoes with three passing attempts on Monday Night Football, kid.
You're only passing three times. No bull.
Here's an update with Big Jim. I want some Celtics thoughts from Gasper when we come back.
What do you want to talk about?
Mike in Framingham. What?
Felger and Mass.
Hey, I love your show. I don't agree with anything you guys ever say, though.
More Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It takes a village, and the coaches... They've been in a lot of games like this, and Coach Belichick and Coach Josh, they've been in every type of element there is, and they know what it takes to win. So I think we knew if we just held onto the ball, we'd be okay. And when we do that this year, we're like 93% win. So we just got to continue to do that.
That's to Ted's point. I mean, why wouldn't Bill like this kid? It takes a village? What the hell is that? All right, Gasper, joining us here from the Boston Globe. Your thoughts on the Celtics at this hour? I just remain so underwhelmed by that team and so perplexed that they're just not better.
I think a lot of people are, and I noticed this week, you know, some people sort of coming to my side of the street. I saw my good friend B-Rob and my other good friend Chris Forsberg writing about, well, you might have to do something here, Brad Stevens. You might have to break it up. I mean, they're 13 Ooh, and 13.
Those are the most loyal, you know,
green teamers.
People that follow the team, yeah.
I mean, I just think it's obvious to everyone. And what's most concerning to me is that you're starting to hear some of the same laments and complaints from Ime Udoka that you heard from Brad Stevens. And so they thought they could get more out of this group. They could add, you know, tinker around the edges with guys like Richardson, who's played well, and Schroeder, who's obviously played well. But you got the same core guys, basically. You bring back Al. You have a different coach. We should get more out of it. And that hasn't been the case. And I also want to just sort of flag for you guys a little bit of an alarming stat that I sort of came up with today, just doing a little research in regards to Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown.
Let's hear it. Okay. I like it.
So Jason Tatum this year has 10 games where he scored 30-plus points. Eight of those games have been games that Jaylen Brown missed. Jaylen Brown has missed half the games. He's missed 13 games. So in eight of those games, Tatum has scored 30-plus points. Now, in two other games, including the Clippers game, he was pretty close. Clippers game, he had 29, and Jaylen didn't play. Another game against Milwaukee in November, he had 27. So this goes back to my core concern about this group. Can Tatum and Brown play together? Can they bring out the best in each other? And why do you get the best from Tatum when he's literally like the last man on earth in terms of the only offensive option? Because we saw this last year when Jaylen Brown went down. He had the 60-point performance when he was so great against Brooklyn. Why can he, for the most part, only do this when Jaylen Brown isn't there, when there's no one close to being on his level playing with him? Now, in fairness to Tatum, I will say, his highest scoring game of the season was 41 points against Charlotte, a game in which Jaylen Brown played. But again, the numbers here, 10 30-plus point games this year, eight of them have come when Jaylen Brown was out of the lineup.
So what do you say? Conclusion.
Conclusion for me would be, why isn't Jason Tatum able to function at a high level with the type of player it's going to take for him to win a championship? Like, he's not going to win a championship solo. But, so I'd say the red flag on that for me is Tatum.
Okay, so why? Why do you look at Tatum on that and not say, well, when Jaylen Brown's on the floor, the ball sticks with him and Tatum doesn't get the same opportunities because Brown's affecting that?
Because the number for me is too high, and I guess I would look at the 41-point game when they were both in there and say, well, hold on a second. How did he manage to score 41 with Jaylen Brown on the floor, and why can't he do that more often? And I also go back and look at last year, and to be honest with you guys, even though they were losing and a 500 team, he looked happier to me. Like, Brown's not here. I get all the shots. I'm doing my thing. And he played great. I mean, he really, you know, Jason Tatum really played great. And so it's like, why does his best come when he's sort of like the only option? Is that a reflection of him in terms of him being uncomfortable or, I don't want to say intimidated, but in some way deterred by having another player close to him on the floor? Does he always need it to funnel straight through him? In short, is he Carmelo Anthony?
Yeah, he's a selfish player. So, I don't think it's much of a mystery. He's more comfortable scoring when the other higher scorer is unavailable. He's a me-first type of player.
So TJ has the same, you know, Ted also, you know, there's a intangible sort of quotient to Jason Tatum. That's your question, Ted, right?
Yeah. No, well, look, I just, I think I called him, you know, he's a really great supporting actor. I just don't think he's a lead actor.
So you don't think he's a one?
I will say this, not in Boston. So the way this team is constructed, I just don't think he's the guy. I feel like he really he's just defers. He's not an aggressive like mindset, and he's just not a killer in my opinion. All right, but look, there's a lot of great supporting actors out there. I'm a big fan of a lot of them. I just don't think he's the lead actor, especially on this team. He's been here 5 years. I've never seen that much growth in him when it comes to being a leader. I don't think he's a vocal leader. I don't think
he's not a vocal leader.
I don't think he holds guys accountable. And so I'm kind of down. I'm kind of down on him. And I gave a stat before the show, Chris, or the start of the show in my opening take, that he has got the last four games, his rating is like 126. When the first 22 games that preceded that, he was 106. All right. He's playing his points per average or per game those last four games. He's like around 32 points.
32.8, yep.
I think it leads the NBA in those last four games. Well, they're 1-3 in those games. So a lot of these times he puts points up they're not meaningful and they're not impactful. And I just don't think I don't think he's a lead actor. I think he's a really great supporting actor.
So let's drive it all the way home. If they have to break up the two, Chris, you're saying you would rather build around Brown than Tatum.
Ooh, that's a tough
one. And how much does the injury thing come in here? Because it feels to me like Brown can't stay on the effing floor.
Yeah, I mean, a hamstring is a nagging injury. I mean, last year, the wrist, that's kind of a fluke thing. I think if maybe they were a little closer to contention, he maybe would have put off that surgery. It's hard to say. I mean, you know how I feel about this. I say this all the time. It's if you could combine the two guys, you'd have the perfect guy. I mean, give me Tatum's skills and Jaylen Brown's mentality, and that's ultimately what you want. If you can't get that, which you can't, then they need to function better together. So I'm going to stick to what I said before. I want to see how it functions if you subtract another piece from this puzzle, and that's Marcus Smart. What happens then? Does one of them just, you know, really emphatically take the lead dog role? Even if that doesn't mean you take the most shots, does it just become from a leadership standpoint, this is Jaylen Brown's team, even though Tatum's the leading scorer? I'm not blaming Smart, but before I give up on Tatum and Brown, here's what I know. I know the three of them together doesn't work. There are some signs that Tatum and Brown don't work. But before I definitively say that, I want to see Tatum and Brown together without Smart. You have to convince me.
One final segment of calls with Gasper in our long commercial-free segment next.
Felger. Oh, he is a manipulative weasel.
And Mass.
He does himself no service by actually talking.
You've got to listen to Believe It.
It's about me.
Yes, absolutely.
It's about me.
No question.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Well, you know what it is? It's that Bill Belichick is the GOAT. Bill Belichick is the greatest of all time. That he understands how to build football teams in his likeness and image. You know, the only other person they talked about building things in his likeness and image?
Yeah.
It was in the Bible, and it was God.
It was God. Yeah. Again, some of the commentary from this week, maybe a little strong. Back to your phones here, as promised. Andrew and Taunton with the Celtics talk. Go ahead, Andrew.
Hey, guys, how's it going? I think we can all kind of agree that the Celtics core needs to be broken up. And I think, honestly, like, this could be the perfect time to do it. You don't see players like Damian Lillard available very often. I think it's time. You got to, once that January deadline comes up, you package Brown, Smart, picks, whatever roster fodder you need, and you go get that killer, that lead actor, Damian Lillard. And
okay, let me just stop you. Thank you for the call, Andrew. Do you like Lillard? If not, give me a target across the league.
Ooh, that's I love Lillard. I love him. The only thing is, are you going down the same road you sort of went down with Kyrie and Kemba Walker from the standpoint of aging, at least with Kemba, point guard, who is a great scorer, but now, I mean, Damian Lillard, I think, is 32. So he's sort of at a point where some of that wear and tear can add up. And with these smaller guys, when they lose even half a step, like, you're not the same player. So I'm a big Dame fan. But I just look at it and think, is he too old at this point? Like, are you narrowing your window too much if you bring that guy in? In terms of, like, a target for them, I mean, I would maybe aim – it depends on who you're moving here, but I would maybe aim a little lower in terms of, like, a point guard. If you could get a DeJounte Murray or somebody like Tyrese Halliburton who has some upside. I mean, Murray right now is a guy – I think he's, like, second or third in the league in triple-doubles. I think it's Jokic, LeBron, and Murray. He's playing really well. In San Antonio, he's only like 25. And then Halliburton's 21. He's a real point guard, shoots 40% from three. I would maybe look more at somebody like that at this point.
What are you giving up to get? Like, why would San Antonio move on from him? So you're going to move?
Well, because they're stuck. Like, they're just kind of stuck where they are. And he's the best player on their team. And as long as he's the best player on their team, you know, they're probably in the West not really going to be able to go somewhere. So would they take... Let's say, and I'm not saying I want to move Jaylen Brown, but hypothetically, if you were to throw him in there, do they say, okay, Jaylen Brown just has more upside overall than Murray? Or if you made like a deal with Sacramento, like a huge deal, would you send Jaylen Brown there and get back like Halliburton, Harrison Barnes, maybe Buddy Hield? You'd have to throw other stuff in to make the salaries match, like Josh Richardson and other things you'd have to throw in there. But would you make a deal like that if you feel like, okay, Tatum's our guy, it's not working with Tatum and Brown, let's try and reconfigure this roster.
Mike and Braintree with something we haven't hit on yet today, the Gillette Stadium renovations. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, not to pile on the poor Buffalo fans, but how are you feeling this morning in Buffalo when your owners won't build you a stadium unless they get public money, and then you look and the Patriots are throwing $200 million into the stadium, which is something that no one really asked for, but it should help keep the noise in the stadium at least.
Okay, so you know, I think the real mind bleep for Buffalo is that they can't get Belichick and Brady out of their face. It's like, you know, they just climbed to the top of the mountain. Now Belichick just went in there, embarrassed them. They're all, Bill's all up in their head. Now they need to recover, and who are they facing? Brady. It's like Brady, Belichick, Brady. They can't get Brady and Belichick out of their way. It's that's I would have nightmares if I were a Buffalo fan. The Gillette Stadium renovations, what are your thoughts? And if you haven't heard out there, folks are going to partially enclose the lighthouse end. It's not going to be a full enclosure, but they're going to build like a big glorified walkway kind of function space.
Felger seats.
All glass.
Yeah, fancy seats.
All glass with a massive, the largest outdoor scoreboard and video screen.
Fancy Felger seats if he can get that barcode to work.
Now that you're mocking me, I will say that they need that walkway because...
Why do I have to go all the way around, Buffy?
Wouldn't I have to walk around the south end zone to get down to the Putnam exit on the east side, but I'm sitting on the west side where the 98.5 The Sports Hub box is, and this is too long of a walk, and I got to walk down those gross, yucky steps next to CBS seat. I want to walk through the red level all the way to my car. Okay, so...
You want to be with the hoi polloi.
They do need the walkway between the red level on the north end, north side of the stadium. I will say that.
Murray, Felger's like, oh my God, the Grey Poupon stand is on the other side.
Do you know the number of people?
The Putnam Club. This is outrageous.
People I have to encounter going that other way?
This is my chance to yell at him. I have two quick thoughts on this, and it's something I heard with Beadle and Hardy today, and I agree completely. If I'm Bill, I'm pissed because you now take away that advantage of that side of the end zone and the wind. And, you know, how that has been advantageous for this team as part of this being the home field for a while now. And then if I'm also the Revs, I heard Hardy bring this up. Where's ours? Where's our stadium? You're spending all this money on this place? You can't even give us a little bit? Come on.
They've spent more money on the effing red level walkway than they have on the entire soccer team for 25
years. Well, that's not true, though, because they built like a really awesome training.
I'm kidding. Go ahead. What do you think of the renovation?
No, I mean, I would agree with what Murray said. I mean, I think Bill's not going to like it because they're enclosing that end. It looks pretty cool, though. I mean, the one thing I would say, and this is not a shot, but I do wish they would, and I know it's difficult with the elements, but how about some covered escalators or something? It's a lot of ramps and a lot of steps.
Please.
A fancy coat's going to get wet.
For the 300s? those guys, you know, those are the schlubs.
You know, it's one of the...
We got to take care of the red level folk. That's what we're worried about.
It's one of the few stadiums, I believe, in the NFL that it was actually funded by private money mostly, right?
That's
I don't think
those
are
a lot of them.
So, you know, let's face it. I mean, look, it's 20 years old now. I don't know, throwing an extra, you know, $250 million in there, is that just putting lipstick on a pig? It's not a state-of-the-art stadium to begin with, because I think they cut a lot of corners because they didn't have public money. But I don't know, like, I just feel like, if you're going to put another $250 million in, I don't know. I know it's a lot more to build a new one, but I don't know, 20 years is a long time for a stadium where you become obsolete compared to the other stadiums.
I mean, I think the place overall looks pretty good. My question would be more to you from the player standpoint, you know, are they doing anything for the players? Because a lot of teams, you look at it, they don't have their stadium and their training facility. I mean, that's one way that they've combined the two. The stadium is both their game day stadium and their training facility. Mm-hmm. A lot of teams have a separate training facility. So I'm curious, and I read this quickly. I didn't see anything in there about sort of internal upgrades for the players or how that goes. So I'm wondering if they're going to do anything there.
Please.
Screw them too.
Me?
Yeah. The players and the 300 level people are the same.
You want a player lounge?
I just don't want to have to walk through the people.
They care more about the Felgers of the world than the players.
Right. Build me a walkway.
Did you see they are going to change, though, that entrance? Like, it shouldn't back up with the barcodes the way it did for you. Like, they're going to push it back. It shouldn't get as backed up. The plaza will be more open.
As much separation as I can get from the common folk is what I'm looking for. The thing is, I'm still not convinced it's going to be much louder. It should be. The stadium's a problem in terms of the crowd noise.
The crowd noise is terrible.
Okay, but it's...
But it just escapes. It's not their fault.
It's also the crowd isn't that loud. And it's partly it's not your fault because, and this goes back to the old Foxborough Stadium, which was such a zoo, that when they went to the new stadium, they rightly said, we have to make this more of a family atmosphere, right? Yeah. So we're going to weed out the drunken behavior. We're going to weed out the unruliness.
We don't want Murray and his friends showing up.
Right. So, like, I mean, and they needed to do it. I mean, the old place was a freaking combat zone. And, so, like, I get it. But the offshoot of that is, and the stories are legendary, people chirp you to sit down. You know, you're being too loud, or you're standing up and they tell you to sit down. And so I think, and never mind the very comfy, nice red seats. We don't really like to go outside. I'd rather sit by the bar or the fire. And so we're really not out there to make noise. So I don't care if you enclose the thing. Are the people making enough noise in the first place? It's also not that great of a football crowd. I just hate to say it.
It's true, though.
It is still new money, sort of. Like, it's not an ingrained football thing yet. So it'll help, but I don't know if that's going to solve the noise issue.
And did I see correctly, they're going to put people up on the lighthouse now, too? Is it going to like have an observation?
Yeah, it is. Be seats? It is.
Oh, yeah, so it's going to be like the monster seats of Gillette?
Yes.
I would put chain link fences up there or something. Yeah. Be careful about all that. Anyway, all right, that took up too much time. Gasper, any final thoughts for us?
No, that's it. I was just going to ask you, you know, as a Packers owner, how do you feel about these renovations at Gillette? Does it motivate you guys to do even more? I know you've done a lot down there with the Titletown development.
You got to do something with the money. They make it hand over fist, and it's nonprofit. So
you got to give it to the quarterback.
You put it back. Yeah, the quarterback in the building. Chris, thanks for coming in,
good
man.
Good to see you guys.
All right, Chris. We got an hour to go. Myself and Ted Johnson and Big Jim Murray, I promise. Right back to your phones after the update. There are no commercials here.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.